Today on An Adventure in History with Mac Burns, Paulette McCoy, Julie Flews, and Alana Quayla, we remember our friend, Skip Hauke.
You are a local icon. We make fun of at Rotary how old you are, but
yes,
You're really not that old, but you've seen a lot of things, and you've lived here your entire life.
I'm born in the old Columbia Hospital. And I tell everybody, I hope my life doesn't go full circle, because now it's a care center, so I don't want to go back. Yeah, I think so.
But we wanted to talk about growing up here. What was it like being the kid? Tell us about your neighborhood and your friends and things you did and fishing or whatever else you want to go.
Well, a lot of it's going to seem like bragging, because if asked, I would say I had the best childhood possible. I mean, we had a super neighborhood. It was on 39th Street is where we lived, up past after school, right on the other side of the Franklin Avenue Bridge. And from there up to 40th, from 38th to 40th, was our neighborhood. Lots of kids, lots of things to do, lots of woods to play in. And we just, probably the biggest blessing was no computers, no cell phones, no video games. We were outside all the time. The only rule in the whole neighborhood is when the streetlights come on, you go home. And that was it. I mean, our parents didn't watch over us. We had more freedom back then than ever. And we'd be gone all day. My brother and I, even as little kids, we'd be down at the East End Mooring Basin fishing for suckers. No life jackets, no nothing. Ride our bikes all over town, get on the bus and go over to Tapiola. And it was just a different world then. And I understand it now. I mean, I probably treat my kids different today, too.
Sure.
But it was really, we had full freedom. And you, before I forget, I got to come back to the fire station. On the third floor of the fire station, we used to play up there. The firemen were really nice to us. And it's a little basketball court up there. And someday I'd like to go back and see it. Maybe if I knew the director of the Historical Society, he could get me in there.
That jerk won't do a thing like that for you.
But we spent a lot of time up there. And if we were good kids and behaved ourselves, the firemen would let us slide down the pole.
Oh, wow.
And it was a neat place to gather, and it was just kind of ours. I mean, the rest of the town kids weren't there. It was just those of us fortunate enough to live in Upper Town. Yeah, it was great. We seemed to know them all. I don't remember any names, but they were very, very friendly to us, and I don't think we ever caused much damage. And
obviously.
But we sure had fun up there. We played a lot of basketball. And I remember it. It's probably about the size of this room, you know, but I remember it as a much bigger location.
It's actually pretty big.
Yeah.
So your memory is...
I'd like to see it again.
We'll get you up there.
And you played basketball up there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's big. That is large.
Well, yeah, it was like a small gymnasium.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was a train bearer for Queen Lydia Dorn in the 1950, 49 or 50, regatta court. My mom got a call and asked if I would be train bearer. I said, Mom, what? So I was about 7 years old. I said, well, what do I have to do? She says, you have to walk behind this lady and hold up her dress. Well, I wasn't too excited about that then. But to this day, whenever I see Lydia, I get down on one knee, no matter where we are, in a restaurant or whatever, and I take her hand and kiss her hand, and she just laughs like mad. She's still here. So it was fun. You know, all the kids spent a lot of time in the woods building forts and chopping down trees, to build our own fort. Probably never cut down a tree more than 2 inches because you got tired real fast.
Yes.
But it was just a really great neighborhood to live in, and I drive up there every once in a while just to kind of relive it, because a lot of those people I'm still very close friends with.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. How many of those kids did you stay friends with?
Probably my closest one would be Helen Nygaard. That's Martin's sister. We went all the way through school together. She and I are exactly the same age. And she had a sister, Olga, that was my brother's age. So, and then she had an older sister, Denise, who was my sister's age. I mean, we spent a lot of time together as kids. I spent a lot of, they were the first ones in the neighborhood to get a TV. So my brother and I spent a lot of time up there. My favorite one, is, and I kid him about it all the time, was that I was up there having lunch with them one day. I was probably 8. They always had a lot of fish because Andrew Nygaard, he spoke, I mean, he was Norwegian, and you knew he was Norwegian. And he and I got along just great. But so they asked me to stay for lunch, and Andrew says, "Hurry up, girls. We got to get going pretty quick. Where are you going?" "Well, we're going on vacation." I said, "Well, I could go with you if you want me to." Andrew said, "Okay with me." And he was the boss. So I ran through the woods. It was a very short, probably not even a half a block to my house through the woods. And ran through and hollered at Mom. "Mom, I need some clothes. I'm going on vacation with the Nygaards." "Okay." So away we went. The only place we went to some dam, I know that. I remember seeing some dam, and I don't know which dam it was. And we went to Banks. It was a big, huge vacation.
Oh, yeah.
Went to Banks. I had relatives there in Banks or something. But Andrew Nygaard took us to school every day when we got, before I got my driver's license. He had an old 51 Ford pickup. He was the worst driver you'd ever seen in your life. We'd come down Franklin, and we'd hit Marine Drive. He never stopped. He just kept going. But he was a wonderful, wonderful guy. As a kid, he used to take me down to Warrenton and watch him dump logs. And I'd sit there all day watching these trucks come in, and then they'd push the logs into the river. And but he was, Martin was long gone when I was growing up there. He was older than I was, but very, very close to the Nygaard family, Helen especially. I'll tell you another story. This is a great one. We were sliding one time. I hope she's listening. We were sliding one time on a short sled, and we had good snow that year. And so we had made a jump on Franklin, one block up from Astor School. And she was on my back. I was laying down on this sled, and she was laying on top of me. And we went over this jump. She got pretty excited and wet her pants on top of me. Well, by the time I got home, I was pretty stiff. And to this day, whenever I see Helen, I say, "You're not going to wet on me, are you?" And she laughed. But we had a great relationship. Still do.
That story. Terrible story.
So where was school? Talk about
John Jacob Astor. Yep. Kindergarten cop, of course, to those in today. And great school. Great school. I had great teachers. And we lived just 3 blocks from Astor, so we never had hot lunch or we never took our lunch. We always went home for lunch. And it was so cool because we'd take our bikes and set them up against the steps, the back steps, and we'd run in and eat as fast as we can, jump on our bikes, coast all the way back down to school, and we'd be the first ones on the playground. We'd get the best balls and everything, you know, so it was great. So we were, the proximity to the school was great, and a wonderful school, and still is. Today, I just marvel when I go in that school and see what stewards we have been. Astor looks better today than when I was there. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, my dad, who died at 95 years of age, went to Astor as well. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's an old school.
Was it K through 12 at the time, or did you have the Astoria High School too?
No, yeah, we had a high school. I was in the first class that went all 4 years at the brick house, as they call it, okay? My sister was the last class to go all 4 years up at the college.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And what kind of a student were you like in high school?
That's a terrible question to ask. I was, C is average, right?
Yes.
I was average student. I got into college, I think, with a 2.5.
Hey, that's my territory. I like that.
I got into college.
I went to Pacific Lutheran University up in Tacoma, and I think the only reason I got in, because my whole family had been there. My grandmother went there when it was Pacific Lutheran Academy. My dad went there. He was a student body president up there. My sister and several aunts and uncles, they all went there. I think it was just a tradition, the only reason I got in. And it was tough because my sister was very, very smart, and they kind of figured I might be too. But
what were your favorite subjects in high school?
Recess and gym. And I liked lunch quite a bit. I hated math, but I was just an average student. There's no question about it. And it's totally my fault. I didn't work that hard at it.
Any teachers that you remember?
Oh, I can remember a lot of them. Nedra Christensen, she was my speech teacher. Bill Scott was my chemistry teacher. Reuter was my algebra teacher, and he had a quirk. When he was going to give you a pop quiz, he wore red socks.
Oh, interesting.
That's
oh,
the weird. First thing you did when you got to school was go find Reuter, see if he got socks on, so he could start to quiver. I was a lousy in math. I hated it. Still do.
Did he tell you about the red socks, or did you figure it out?
He figured it out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's amazing.
I like that.
We had one gal, Mrs. Nobson. She was the English teacher. Her favorite word was fuchsia, and you didn't get out of class. You didn't get out of her class unless you could spell fuchsia.
Spell
any
it.
Anytime. F-U-S-C-H-I-A, I believe.
I don't know. Sounds good to me.
She raised fuchsia. So she lived out there by Camp Riley or someplace. She was a great, great gal. They were all old, though.
And, of course, sports have always been huge in Astoria. So what sports did you participate in?
I participated in just about every sport there was, and I achieved in none of them. I was a terrible athlete, but I loved the game, all of them. I played baseball, basketball, football. I wrestled. I was on the first wrestling team Astoria High ever had. Probably my name to fame in sports is in basketball. I was the only eighth grader on the B string. Everybody else, the eighth graders, were on the A string. But I got a big award at the end of the year. I got the Duffy Zeller Sportsmanship Award. Yeah. I think they felt sorry for me because when I played football in high school as a freshman and sophomore. I was a fullback. I didn't weigh 100 pounds yet. And I think it was 95 pounds or something like that. And I just sat on the bench praying the coach wouldn't put me into a game. I wasn't an athlete, but I love athletics. But
Well, that's great that you did it.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
So what about your name? So we brought that up because I learned that Skip was not your name when your son walked into the chamber one day and said, is Eric here?
No.
And first of all, I was like, we'll skip this son, and I don't know who Eric is. So who are you? Who are you? And then later, you sat me down and set me straight.
Yeah, I've been called Skip forever. The only ones that ever called me Eric were my old teachers and my mother when she was angry with me. She'd call me Eric. But I think my name Skip, the nickname, came from my grandfather, who was a fisherman, and so they called him Skipper, and he started calling me Skipper. That leads me to one of the highlights of my childhood. I was 12 years old, and my mom got probably the most, in my mind anyway, the most important phone call she'd ever received. So I was in the fifth grade, I think, and my uncle from Eureka, California, who was a commercial fisherman, and my idol, called and says, is Skippy ready, old enough to go fishing with me? My mom and dad talked it over and said yes. I'm not so sure they weren't trying to get rid of me because fishing is a very dangerous job. And it was just my uncle and myself on one of the most beautiful trolling boats on the West Coast, the Pacific Belle, B-E-L-L-E, 56-foot double-ender made out of prime Port Orford cedar. I started when I was 12, and I fished for them for 10 years. I'd go fly down to Eureka the day I got out of school and fly back the day before school started. And we spent 3 months or however long for 10 years until through my junior year in college. And I loved absolutely every minute of it. It was just my uncle and myself. We'd be out at sea for 3 weeks at a time, never see land. I did all the cooking and half the fish pulling and standing night watch at 12, 13, 14 years of age. He treated me like an adult. We worked very, very hard together, and I made very good money doing it.
What were you fishing for?
Albacore tuna most of the time. We trolled for salmon for the first couple of weeks, and then we'd head for albacore, and at that time we'd head for Mexico, and we'd fish from the Mexican border to the Canadian border, and during the summer following the fish north. And sometimes I'd end up in Astoria, sometimes I'd fly home from someplace else, but it was just probably the most wonderful job a kid could ever have.
That is incredible.
And to this day, you still spend a lot of time fishing. That's the only thing I remember from the chamber was that, you know, work hours sort of adusted based on what season it
was. Well, you don't have to say that. I was very diligent in my job.
I was about to say, wow, she's totally selling you out.
I hope my board's not listening.
Crab season, razor clam season.
You've been a resident of Astoria for, what, about 3 or 4 years now?
Yeah, about 67 years.
Okay, I was a little bit off.
And your parents before you.
Yes.
Now, were they immigrants or were your grandparents?
Grandparents were. Uh-huh. Both sides, both my mom's family and my dad's family were from Norway.
My mom's was
way up north of the Arctic Circle, and and my dad was down around the middle part of Norway. So, we've gone back and visited the homeland. And my dad's family came from a little island, and that is where our name came from. The name of the island was Hawk Island, but in Norwegian that would be Hawk Ø. And our name in Norway was Engelbertsen, so I'm glad they changed it. So,
what?
Yes, that was our name. And a lot of people took the name of the place they were from or the farm or anything like
okay.
that.
Okay. And so was he a fisherman?
He was a farmer, and he started our grocery store.
Right.
In 1890, he started, along with a partner, Schofield. They started Schofield and Hockey's Grocery.
So how come Schofield got top billing?
Maybe it was Hockey and Schofield. I don't remember.
It should have been.
And where was this store located?
Marine Drive, actually, 3177 Marine Drive, right across from what used to be the school district office, was the old store site. That's where it was originated in 1890, and then that building burned down, and somebody tried to rob it and tried to use a torch and a safe and burned the whole building down. and then it was rebuilt there until 1978 when we built what we now call the new store over where Safeway is now.
So, Skip, tell us about the deliveries. Did you deliver? You delivered all out over town, and where else did you go?
Usually mainly from the entire town, from Alderbrook. We didn't go out of the city limits, but we get the orders in the morning or the day before even, and then we'd put them together, and you had little numbers on the box that you'd stick in the box that corresponded with the number on the order slip. And so you knew when you got to Cederberg's house that they're number 7. So you went and looked for a box that had 7 sticking out of it, and that was our order.
Begs the question. I was going to joke about paper or plastic. When did bags start?
Well, I don't know. We had paper bags for a long, long time. But actually, when my grandfather first started the business, you talk about delivery, he would go out in the morning in a horse and wagon and go around the neighborhoods and take the orders because there wasn't phones. So he would take the orders, come back, fill them up, and then deliver them in the afternoon. And then when the phones came in, matter of fact, our phone number, we had two lines coming into the old store, 227 and 228. That was our phone number.
Now, did you get tips when you delivered?
No, we got cookies.
You got cookies.
Cookies.
We got cookies.
Instead of tips.
No, we didn't take tips. I don't think we were offered any. I don't remember.
Yeah.
We probably wouldn't have been allowed to take them.
Yeah.
Because it was a service that everybody provided. There was probably 10 grocery stores that delivered.
Now, did you deliver to any boats out in the river?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I've delivered groceries as far south as Coos Bay to a Corps of Engineers dredge. And I used to take them all the way, all year long, up to Aberdeen, Westport, Portland once a week. They were the Corps of Engineers Essence, and they were my boat. They were my boats, and I got them from Lawson Stevens. And when he went out of business, I got the boats from him. So it was, and I had the salvage chief, and that was great.
Okay, so did you also then deliver to the bar pilots? Did you say?
Yes, we did. We've had the bar pilots. I don't know how long, but when I was just a little boy, I remember going with my dad down to the bar pilot's office, which is the same office that's at the bottom of 14th there, the same place, and we would take the order down, or they'd call it in, and we'd put it up, and they had a little freezer. We put the ice cream in the freezer and put the cold stuff in the fridge, and then they had a shelf for the box. But that was in the days when they had a larger crew on the ship, on the pilot boat, and so they did a lot of cooking there. And we had the bar pilots right up to the time I got out of the business.
So in 78, you built the Halkey store where the present-day new Safeway is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had another store over by the Ford.
Yeah. I did. Bayside.
You were a chain store. Yeah. You were a chain store then.
I was, and I actually had one up in Rainier also. And then I had one at one time down in Seaside on Broadway right next to the bumper cars. It was a store about the size of this studio we're in right now. I think we had two aisles and one gondola down the middle. That one didn't last very long. But,
wow.
But I need to tell you, you talked earlier about neighborhood stores, and my favorite story is Barney and Arnold Johnson lived up on Grand. And they were good customers of ours. Barney was the wife, and they had a little dog. Now, she could call up my grandmother, who was working in the store, and she said, I don't remember the name of the dog, but she said, I'm sending my dog down, and I need a couple things. So the dog would come down to the store with this basket in the mouth, and Grandma would fill the order.
No.
Yep. And the dog would take it home, and you could even have hamburger or steak in there. The only thing the dog would destroy, she could not order chewing gum. The dog would stop on the way home and chew the gum. But it's a neat story. She just loved to tell me that story. Yeah, it was fun.
So we
had a great life in the grocery business. I mean, we had people ask me every day, do you miss the grocery business? And I said, not one bit. But I do miss I miss my employees, who I see every day. I mean, sure. There's someone coming by. Yeah, they used to work for me. But also, the biggest part, I miss my customers. We had a great, great clientele of loyal customers.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I came right after you'd closed the store. So I was never one of your customers. But everyone has always talked to me about the Friday chicken barbecues.
Yeah, you really miss it.
Everybody in Astoria was eating chicken, your chicken, every Friday night.
Well, yeah, it smelled so good down there.
We'd alternate. We'd do it at Bayside one Friday and Hockey's on the other Friday. Yeah, but we have the trailer, and we could get, we just did hindquarters. And I don't remember what we charged for them, but they were pretty cheap. And but we could do up to 1,000 a day, 1,000 hindquarters a day. And it was a miserable job. You just got full of grease and coughing up black smoke. And if I don't end up with black lung disease, it'd be something else. Darwin Miners, who was my manager, we talk about often. And I think we figure we probably did over our career maybe 400,000 of these things. I mean, it's just,
wow.
It was amazing. Matter of fact, I get asked all the time if I do one. And I've declined. That was the first thing I sold, so I wouldn't have to do that.
Our theme this year is the Winter Olympics, so I'm trying to come up with a costume.
do you want us to help you?
Yeah. I'm
Greco wrestling.
A couple of good ones. If you have any great ideas on what I could come as, I'm thinking maybe coming as a Zamboni.
I can't compete with that.
But you know, maybe somebody else have a better idea. But,
can we push you around?
Oh my goodness!
So you can go online or come in and pick up your sign up for your tickets at the chamber. So
Well, you just sold next.
It's gonna be a fun event.
You just sold an extra 50 tickets by people wanting to see if you were coming as a Zamboni or not. So you know, that was where I was gonna head next. Is you have just an amazing outlook on life. You find humor and you're good natured and you make people feel at ease. Whether it was when you were running your grocery store, or you were on city council at one point, weren't you?
What's that?
You were on city council at one point, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I think everything you do, you find the humor in it, and you have a lighthearted touch. I hope you remember this, because I didn't prompt you that I was going to ask you to tell this story. But a few years ago, you bought a Christmas tree.
Oh, jeez. No, I didn't buy it. It was given to me by Max Bigby. He said, come up to my place, because we live out in the John Day area, and he does too. And I told him I was going to get a tree and bring my grandson Gunner, who lives here in Warrington, with me, and Sarah, and we're gonna go out and cut down a tree. Max had come up and cut one down, so we did, and Gunner helped me load it into the truck, and I tied it in so I wouldn't lose it, and we drove back down John Day River Road, across the bridge over to our house. We got there, no tree. You're kidding me. So we turned around, drove all the way back up to Max's, looking in the ditch and everything, and we never saw it. We just concluded that somebody else had picked it up. But then when I turned around up at Max's, I saw the tree. Yes, it had come out, but it was still tied onto the truck, so we had drug it for at least 2 miles. We drug it, and one whole side was bare. I mean, limbs and everything, but it fit a lot closer to the wall. And
it was perfect.
It was perfect.
That's great.
We thought about doing that this year, because then that kind of sticks out in our small house. It was a great story. You know,
and great memories that clearly have an impact on those who hear it.
The Skip Howkey. Anytime anybody tells me they have a tree too big, I say you need to do what Skip did. He can make a tree fit anywhere.
Oh gosh, yeah. You can drag it on two sides and then put it in a corner. So it's a lot of fun.
You've been an icon in Astoria. You've been a philanthropist. You've helped good causes like the school bond most recently. You were a city councilor. You were at the chamber. You were a respected businessman for decades. What would you like your legacy to be remembered as?
Wow. It's getting closer, too.
No, it's not.
I guess something like my folks would say, that he gave back to his community. One thing I'm very, very proud of, I got a couple of George Awards, and my mom got a George Award, and my dad got a George Award. And that's kind of special. Other than that, I just hope people remember me as somebody who gave back.
And I would say that's very true. I think that people knew that you are good-humored, you are a friend to everybody. I can't think of you saying anything mean-spirited. You've always just
been there. You haven't talked to my wife, have you?
You've been there for any cause, anybody that came and asked you for help.
Yeah.
You've never turned it down.
That's what I think of. I think you're personally invested. So when somebody has a problem or an issue, it becomes yours.
Yeah.
So it's not that you gave back, it's that you took it on. I mean, that's kind of special.
And you're still doing it.
That was great, ingrained in me.
Skip, you made some history. Everybody else, thanks for listening. Go make some history. We'll catch you next week.